Hi, this is James Hinchcliffe. You need more Front Wing.
Hello and welcome to another More Front Wing podcast where we are thrilled to get started on previewing the 2012 IZOD IndyCar Series season. Doesn't it sound good to hear those words, guys?
Finally.
Yes,
sure does.
Absolutely. I'm Steph Wallcraft, co-editor of MoreFrontWing.com, here with my co-editor Paul Dalby, as always. And this time around, we've found for the last couple of years that we've had a lot of fun previewing the seasons with members of the media. And so this year we've decided to do the same thing. And we have invited from Racer, the online editor at Racer.com, Tony DeZino. Tony, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I know we've had a couple of years, you know, in talking and going forward, but this is my first time to be on the podcast, so looking forward to that.
And we apologize for that. That's an oversight on our part, absolutely. So before we get into the meat of the preview of the season here, actually, Tony, let's give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about what you do and the magazine that you work for. Tell us about Racer.
Yeah, so big news for us, and I'll get to that in a minute, but I graduated university back in May of last year, and I started with Racer in August, so big change of scenery moving out from the Midwest to our offices here in Southern California, where we're based in Orange County. And what I do is, I mean, generally I'll have one or two mag pieces, but pretty much I run half of me and my web colleague, we do most of the Racer.com content. I've had more of a sports car focus the last couple of years, but I've still been, you know, pretty active on the IndyCar side as well. So I'd say those two are probably my top area of expertise. And just today, actually, you know, you talk about, well, it's been oversight time-wise, but just today we announced that our original founders, Paul Fanner, has bought back the company. And so as we celebrate our 20-year anniversary next month with our May issue, we're back under new management, new ownership. So it's a great opportunity for the magazine. My goal has been trying to grow the online side. You know, we've only had that for a few years. So, you know, rock and roll from here. Let's see what happens. And, I think Long Beach is going to be really our kind of our big moment for the new Racer. So there we go.
Fantastic. Okay, enough about the dull stuff. Let's talk about racing.
That's not that dull.
No, it's not dull at all. I'm just teasing. But it's, I mean, it doesn't compare to getting to see in 3 short days a brand new car hit the track and we get to see what it can do. And, I mean, who's not completely excited?
Do you realize Racer Magazine wasn't even a teenager yet when we had a new car last time?
Oh, dear.
Well, to be fair, I mean, I haven't been in that case either. I mean, you know, I'm not much older than the magazine, so this is Christmas in March for me to finally get out there and get to seeing it.
This is Christmas in March for everybody.
Yeah.
Let's look back even from the beginning of the off season when people were looking at the DW12, and I mean, this happens every time a new car gets rolled out in any situation when it's been such a long time, right? People look at it. At the state that it's in October, November, and say, oh, this thing's never going to be ready in time. Look at all the problems it has. We're not going to have enough cars on the grid at St. Pete. This is going to go wrong. That's going to go wrong. Well, guess what? Not only is there a full grid for St. Pete, but the car's running great. The drivers are happy with it. All the problems that everybody was concerned about have been resolved. Imagine that. The naysayers were wrong again.
Novel concept, and I mean,
I know, like, right?
It was so funny. I mean, the one conversation I had at the outset was when there was a test at Fontana when Scott Dixon and Ryan Briscoe were out here for it. Ryan was pretty happy, but Scott had some less than complimentary things to say about it at that point. And I think he went off even a little more to Marshall Pruitt than he did to myself. But you know, just in a few short months, suddenly we've gone and we're raising the bar, and we're actually geeked about it now. Where it's like, okay, there's not the teething issues, and if there are, it's going to be something exciting. What to see what happens.
Well, exactly. It adds an element that we haven't had to see in such a long time, in that the teams are actually going to have to work at getting the cars working for their drivers, right? They don't have years and years of data to go by. They have some idea, and, I mean, the road and street course testing that they've done at Barber and at Sebring gives them quite a good basis to go by for the four races that are going to start the season. But the oval cars maybe not completely there yet, but they've got a couple of months to keep working on that, and they're going to have that little bit of data to go by as well. And we know that there are still the concerns about the drivers not wanting there to be pack racing when they get to Texas, but there's still time to work through those sorts of issues. For going into St. Pete right now, I think everybody's feeling that we're in a pretty good state, and the level of work that's left to be done on the car, the general sense seems to be that it's an acceptable amount of tweaking left to be done for a car that's everybody's starting at the same base level on. So that's absolutely where you want to be when you're starting a season with a new car. And I think that everything looks positive at this point.
Like we say, you know, it's now it's about, as you say, sorting it out, seeing how the teams get on with the engineering and stuff. And really, you know, in previous years, we've had engineers try to tweak out the last, you know, that last hundredth, that last thousandth of a second. But now it's going to be more wholesale changes, and I think that's going to be the exciting challenge for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other exciting factor, of course, that we have to look forward to this year is the new engine competition battles that we're going to get to witness. This is maybe oversimplifying, but I think it's fair right now to say that there's the Honda, the Chevy, and the Lotus. The Honda seems to have a heck of a lot of speed, but very low reliability. And then there's the Lotus, which seems like it's as solid as a rock, but they just can't get the thing to go too fast. And then Chevy seems to maybe have found this kind of sweet spot in the middle. Does that match your perceptions, guys, what you think that you've seen from testing so far?
What I've seen so far, it looks like the Chevy has plenty of power. I don't think that they're really that far down on power. If you read Marshall Pruitt's article on speed, was it yesterday? I think it was the season preview article he posted yesterday or 2 days ago. It sounds like the Chevrolet and the Honda are going about making their lap times differently, where Honda is more in the straight line.
Right.
You know, it may take a while to get it going, but when it gets going, it goes really fast, as where the Chevrolet is much more torquey. It shoots off the corner faster, but doesn't maybe quite have the top end speed. So that's going to make things very interesting on the road and street courses. Very, very different approaches to how they make their speed, really, how they can set up their cars, how they really will affect the driving style of the different drivers with the different engines behind them. The reliability issues that Honda has had so far, you know, they're claiming it's had to do with the electrical system. I don't know if that's the same thing that, was it Robbie Gordon that said that they had, that his black box failed and forgot to mention that it failed when the piston went through it? You know, I don't know if it's that sort of thing. I don't have the technical knowledge. All I could tell you is that an engine blew. I couldn't tell you if it's top end, bottom end, turbocharger, what the issue is. It just sounds like engines are kind of blowing. So it will be interesting. And I'll tell you what, I think if that holds true, if what you're saying, Steph, holds true, and it seems to be the case that Honda has these reliability issues, that is a huge, huge disadvantage to Dario Franchitti. Because remember, he's been playing catch up, and I guess this is kind of maybe going where we weren't intending to go yet, but he's been playing catch up to Will Power on the road and street courses the last couple of years, and where he's made his bread and butter has been by being able to finish races. You know, he's had a rock solid Honda engine behind him, and he just doesn't make mistakes on the track. He finishes his races. If all of a sudden now reliability starts to become an issue for Dario, we already know that the table is kind of, or the pendulum has kind of swung toward Will just from the scheduling standpoint with the very, very unbalanced schedule this year. If now Dario has to fight against a schedule and a possible reliability problem, that's going to be a very tough deficit for him to overcome. So I think you're making an assumption there, though.
Yeah. You're making a big assumption in that you're assuming that Will is going to be as strong as we've seen him for the last couple of years. All the reports out of the testing are that Will's not happy with this car. It really doesn't suit his driving style at all. He loved the last car because it was very slippery and oversteery, and that suited him very well. And this one, he doesn't seem to be clicking with quite as quickly. I mean, he's with Penske, so we can't necessarily expect that he's going to struggle with it all season. But off the top, it sounds like he's going to be struggling with the best of them.
He's still willpower.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, he's still willpower. He's still with Team Penske, and he is still the one that you have to prove you can beat week in and week out on the road and street courses.
I don't know. I'm not as confident about that as you are. Tony, what's your take?
My take is that I think the reliability bug could bite anyone and everyone this year, and so to just assume that, you know, Dario is going to be the only person who might be facing reliability issues, you know, we haven't seen or heard of any Chevy engine issues to this point in spring training or testing either, so you got to think that at some point they're going to be vulnerable too. We just don't know who or when. The thing that interests me about, to Paul's point about how Will seems, or as you guys were talking about Will so far, I'm really impressed with how close to the pace the Penske teammates are to this point. Mm-hmm. Elio in particular was very strong at Sebring. I know you can't read too much into it, but I think both him and Briscoe have to be motivated this year, given the new opportunity. Briscoe in particular has been very happy mm-hmm. about this new car. And I think they're the ones that really, you know, if they're within a tenth or two as opposed to the three or four that they've been consistently the last couple of years, I think Will might have to worry more about the internal battle than about reliability or Dario.
Absolutely. Here's a question for you both. And there are a lot of deeply varying opinions on this one. I mean, the Honda reliability over the last few years has been legendary. They've based a lot of their advertising on it. And that is simply not going to be the case anymore. Do you feel that engine blow-ups are a good thing or a bad thing for the sport? Tony, why don't you go first? You're the guest.
I do think they're a good thing. And not because you want the mechanics to have to be putting the car back together, doing rebuilds, and especially as the season goes on, if we get into the stretch of the five straight weekends, that's when it's going to be difficult, you know, those summer months post-Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. But in the interim, you have there's been sort of like I don't want to say a death of the last 15 laps, but pretty much once you're through the final round of pit stops, you've got a general idea of what's going to happen. Well, mm-hmm. You don't have that anymore. I mean, one of the more exciting races I can remember growing up was a race at Road America in 96. Allanter Jr. was leading, and on the last Canada corner on the last lap, engine blows. Michael Andretti comes through and takes the win. It's just like, okay, you didn't see this coming, and now we've really haven't had that for the last 5-6 years. And so, personally, I think it's going to be a good thing. I think it will give some people you wouldn't expect a chance to capitalize.
I was a junior fan, so that wasn't an exciting race for me at all.
I was a kid, so sorry to bring back bad memories.
Paul, anything to add to that? I think that about summarizes my feelings on
it.
Yeah,
I would say so. I'm not one that says I really want to see blue clouds of smoke all over the place.
No, I'm not like it. Oh, that done blown up real good.
Yeah,
not my style either.
No, I
blown up type deal.
I like the. I'm losing a word here. The suspense or the idea that
it's just an element of uncertainty.
Yeah, uncertainty. That's it. Yeah.
Even if somebody's a clear lap ahead of the entire field, you don't know for a fact that he's going to make it to the end. He probably will, but you don't know it for a fact. And that just that little tweak, that little element of the unknown, adds a sense of intrigue that's been missing.
Yeah, I you know maybe. Maybe that would be something interesting if they didn't have the spec electric, the spec ECU you know, though, when electrical things fail and all of a sudden you just lose power with 10 laps to go or something like that. You know, those types of things, all of that uncertainty could really bring some more drama into it. How hard they're going to be pushing these engines, I don't know. I really don't know how hard. You know, Honda, they can claim all the reliability they want. The fact is they were only running them at 90%.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's...
The reason the engines weren't blowing up is because they weren't being pushed.
Right. For a big league engine manufacturer, you would expect that to happen when there's no competition.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, one engine blow up is too many if you're not in a competition mode.
Well, it's not so much Honda's fault in the sense that they weren't pushing their engines, is that those are the engine specs that they were given.
Oh, I agree. I'm not blaming Honda by any means, but I'm saying they shouldn't look at it like Honda's reliability is legendary for just because they haven't blown an engine in the last 5 years.
Well, it's a marketing opportunity.
Exactly.
That grew out of the fact that they were handed the specs.
So have the specs been opened up enough now where they're going to be pushing them at 99%, 100%, or are the specs kind of still tight enough where that limit is still only about 95%?
I think it might be wait and see. I don't know if people are going to want to push them too hard too early. I mean, you might want to kind of get a grip on how the reliability is through the first two or three events, and then really see from that point how it evolves. Once you kind of know what the limits with in terms of mileage are before changeouts, then you can look at pushing a little more. At least that's how I might be seeing it.
I think that's a fair place to leave that topic, because the next one is rather extensive. So let's jump right in. We're going to talk about the new driver and team combinations going into this season. And there's been quite a lot of shakeup in the paddock this off season. So we've opted not to discuss the drivers and teams that are carrying over in the same capacity as from last year, although there's still plenty to talk about there, and it may come up through other topics, but we just want to touch on each of the new driver and team combinations just quickly to talk about what they might bring to the table that might change things up for the 2012 season. You have to start with Rubens. He's obviously... He's top dog in terms of new people joining the series. And this gives us an opportunity to get into a question that was submitted to us today from a longtime listener of ours, Christy, Iowa Indy fan on Twitter. She wants to know whether we think that Rubens is better for, A, the series as a whole, or B, for Tony Kanaan and KV and his chances of improvement. I'll take this one on first. Whether Rubens is going to be better for exposure of the series in general really depends on where in the world you want to look. I think there's no question that Brazil's being turned on its head by this information. I think if Rubens decides to hang out for a few years, then that second race in Brazil is probably already nearly got its contract signed. But outside of Brazil and Formula One diehards and the rest of the world may be taking a little bit more notice, I don't know how much attention Rubens is really going to draw in from anywhere else. I don't know that he's going to have a very massive impact on the North American market. Most of the people who watch Formula One, not most, okay, but a good percentage of the people who watch Formula One in the North American market probably watched IndyCar anyway. And I think that the impact that Rubens joining KV alongside Tony Kanaan is going to have, particularly on Tony Kanaan, is unquestionable. Tony's going to have a lot of motivation to step up his game. He's going to have somebody directly beside him in the same equipment, from the same racing background, similar racing philosophies that he's going to be put up against every single weekend. And I think that we might see somewhat of a reinvigorated Tony Kanaan this season as a result of this change. Guys, do you want to take this?
I think I'll take a look at it.
Sure.
I think it's going to affect KV a little more just because TK, well, like you said a lot, he's I think him and Taku gelled well last year, but there wasn't quite the inner team rivalry or dynamic or what have you. I mean, as Taku kind of grew, he wasn't exactly pushing TK. Well, this is going to be directly these two versus each other. They're friends, but now they're rivals. And also, Rubens doesn't have a preconceived notion of what an IndyCar should feel like, so he's not having to adapt to the carbon brakes or any of the other things that are new on this car. So you've seen it out how quick he is out of the box, and I think his influence can drive that team forward. TK is fortunate that he has his engineer Cowden back, but I think that there'll be more to be gained for the team as a whole by Ruben's presence than directly in the series. You might see a small bump, but I don't think we're all of a sudden going to be jumping into, you know, huge ratings numbers or anything of that sort, just based on Ruben's presence.
Paul, anything?
No, I would agree completely with what both of you said. I think this is a much bigger coup for KV than it is for the series. It gives some nice credibility to the series, but in terms of putting more fans in the North American seats, getting more North American TVs viewing the races, I don't see it having that big of an impact, to be honest with you. But just his technical skills, his experience, his understanding of how to drive a race car is really going to be pushing Tony. And hopefully, you know, another mature voice on that team will really help EJ Viso as well. Bring him along and, you know, kind of get him back in a more, how shall we say, a non-butt of the joke sort of role that he's certainly acquired over the last two or three years at least. So I think much bigger, much, much bigger get for KV Racing than it is for IndyCar as a whole.
I gotta tell you, I think Viso seems very motivated this year. He was down at Sebring this past weekend for the 12 hours of Sebring, and the running joke within the teams was, okay, we're gonna plot our strategy around the car that he's in crashing out, but it turns out he was the most consistent driver out there. And won the class. So he just had a different feel about him this year. It wasn't like the unicycle riding guy or whatever. I think he's determined, and I think those two combined will bring the best out of him this year.
Great. Heading back to Rubens, just a brief comment from Ichi. What do you realistically expect from Rubens this season, Paul?
Well, I keep hearing KV say, you know, it's going to take him a while to really learn the car. This is Rubens Barrichello. This guy's driven Formula One for 19 seasons. This guy knows how to drive a car. I mean, this guy could go out and run a GT car and probably run fairly competitively. I would be shocked if he doesn't win a race this year. It may not happen before Indianapolis, but I think he's going to have at least one win. I think you'll see him consistently in the Fast Six for qualifying. Remember, he's used to the qualifying, the bump, the shootout format of qualifying, so that won't be new to him. Some of the strategy may be a little different, but I would say consistently going in the Fast Six, maybe not every time, but, you know, we won't look at it as a surprise when he gets there, certainly. And I think he'll have at least one win, probably on a road course. I don't think he'll quite master the street circuits yet. So maybe Infineon, something of that ilk near the end of the season. I would look for him to be a prime contender there.
Tony?
I think I would agree. I think at least one win, several podium finishes, and borderline top five in points at season end. Because I think we saw last year TK finished fifth in points, and he wasn't even qualifying that strongly. Mm-hmm. But at this rate, I think Rubens certainly has the potential to get up there, given the number of road and street courses.
That's exactly the point that I was going to make, is that with the road and street course heavy schedule that we have this year, I'll be surprised if Rubens isn't still in the running for the championship at about Sonoma, Baltimore. I don't think he'll win it, particularly not with the finale being Auto Club Speedway, but I think he'll be in the fight for it for a good long time, with at least one win in my opinion, guaranteed. I'd be surprised if it wasn't more. But that being said, it's a very deep field this season, and there are a whole lot of drivers that people are expecting to come away with wins. So let's start talking about some other ones. The return of Dragon Racing, possibly with a little bit of a dark cloud, we're starting to hear over their heads, meant to be, of course, with Catherine Legg and Sebastian Bourdais. There's a slight rumor hinted at on Twitter, today being Tuesday, that one of those cars may not be on the grid for St. Pete, which would be a deep disappointment considering that the car that's being discussed is the one that was granted the team money, and that's kind of a big deal. And of course, they only ran one car for their test days at Sebring as well, because there was apparently a bit of an issue with Lotus receiving the check. So not the most auspicious beginning to what was promising to be a great season for this triumphant return of Jay Penske. Any thoughts from you guys?
I'll tell you, I think you hit the nail on the head. When I think this could be a bigger deal about IndyCar than it is about Dragon Racing, because I think when Dragon Racing was announced, whenever it was, 6 weeks ago or so, as bringing Catherine Legg and Sebastian Bourdais on board, it completely came out of the blue, and everyone was kind of blown away with it. Saying, where did this come from? And show me the money. And then all of a sudden, they land this team deal based on these promises from Jay Penske of, what was it I heard, 10 million internet hits or something?
50 million impressions.
How much was it?
50 million impressions.
As in 50 million.
50. It's been sort of a, I don't want to say running joke on Twitter, but there's been a number of people on other ends of the spectrum, shall we say, that have felt the number was plucked out of thin air a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, unless he's running Amazon here, 50 million isn't... I mean, to make a promise like that and guarantee $1.2 million, I guess, in the team money. I mean, if that car doesn't show up on the grid after they got the team money based on this 50 million internet impressions or website impressions, I think it's a real black eye toward IndyCar. I think people.
Well, Paul Tracy is still sitting on the sidelines. Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah,
like well, Shank.
Yeah, Shank is sitting on the side. Remember, Shank was the first to sign up with Lotus. He wants to be there. He's been very adamant about being there with Paul Tracy. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a number of other teams as well that, you know, probably put up good efforts. Think of Charlie Ryan Kimball. Herta. I mean, you could certainly...
Tagliani for Herta.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Tagliani, Kimball. I mean, Kimball is probably, right now, to be honest, he may be the most visible IndyCar driver there is.
I've been hearing that I don't watch a whole lot of TV outside of racing, but I've been hearing that there are some Novo Nordisk advertisements.
They're all over the place. They're all over. And they're in prime time on network TV. None of the other drivers are doing that. None of the other, maybe Elio in his Pennzoil commercial. I think it's Pennzoil. You know, those are probably the only two mainstream network TV prime time commercials that IndyCar has right now. You know, I think Charlie Kimball Chip Ganassi could have a very strong case. Obviously, Brian Herta, people are making a strong case for him to have that after they won, you know, the 500 last year. I personally don't necessarily buy that argument, but I can see where you could make that argument much more logically than, sure, give us the money and we'll get you 50,000 or 50 million website impressions.
I think the thing that's most frustrating about Dragon is the silence. It's we don't have a PR person, we don't have a Twitter account, we don't have any social media activation, we don't have the owner returning phone calls. And there's a lot of people that you might, if you don't know how to get inside the lair, and what it's been so carefully managed the way that everything has been petered out about that team since the announcement that, you know, you don't want to say you believe it when it happens, but I mean, because it did catch everyone off guard when it was announced. It was like, okay, this is almost sounds too good to be true. I'd especially feel for Seb because it'd be 2 years in a row he'd be missing St. Pete for kind of reasons outside his control. Remember, he and Jakes both crashed in warm-up last year, and he didn't get to start because Jakes had the backup. So it'd be funny if 1 year he doesn't have a car, the next year he doesn't have an engine. So, I mean, hopefully it gets resolved.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Mike Conway with AJ Foyt Racing. I don't think that a lot of people would have been very excited about that announcement when it first happened, but by golly, he's been fast. What are your expectations for him and this revamped outfit for the 2012 season? Tony, do you want to take this one to start?
Yeah, the more I look at this one, the more I love it. Conway is like that classic, you know, it was funny watching Celebrity Apprentice. Adam Carolla referred to Michael Andretti as the top drafter. Like, he just, you don't hear about him, and then he sneaks out of nowhere. Well, that's what Conway was at Long Beach last year. We didn't see him, and then all of a sudden, within a few laps, he was battling Briscoe for the lead. And I was like, oh, where'd he come from? Well, now you've got him on a team that still has Honda engines. I know we were touching on the reliability earlier, but that has to be an important thing for Foyt's team. You've got Don Halliday as an engineer who is, you know, one of the best out there. You've got a guy who, if he can improve his consistency, is certainly a threat to steal one again on a road and street course. And I mean, I don't think there's anybody who would begrudge Foyt ending a decade-long winless streak, even if it is with a guy who's, you know, heart rate doesn't get much above, you know, breathing.
Paul, anything to add?
My point would be that I hope this is the change that Foyt has needed to get back. You know, he was always playing catch up the last engine cycle. Well, you know, the last chassis cycle for the last, what is it, 8 years, I guess. Hopefully now that the deck has been reshuffled, he can, or they can, they, the team, can make the engineering effort and start out on a level playing field and stay there. I think if they can start out there and not play catch-up from the beginning, I think they have a chance of being successful. I don't know if he's going to win a race, but I think they can certainly run in the top five on these road courses. Conway has shown that he can do it. We've seen very random glimpses. I think, was it Vitor Mira that finished second, third, fourth at Brazil a couple of years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Darren Manning a number of years ago ran very strongly at St. Pete. And, you know, they showed that they can really put together a decent package. It's just that having the drivers that bring it home and actually finish the race in those strong positions. I think Mike can do it. He needs to prove he can be consistent, but hopefully this new package, the whole total new package, can get them on that level playing field from the start. And then, as Tony said, you know, they've brought in enough and some good engineers in there that hopefully mm-hmm. when they start there, they can stay there.
I think what I like about this arrangement the most is that what Conway brings to that team is a great deal of talent on road and street courses, and what the team can offer to him is a lot of experience and setup, particularly from AJ, who knows what he's doing on ovals. And I think that that kind of combination in a driver and a team can either be hit or miss, but I can see how it could definitely be a big hit with this combination, and a couple of years of investment in Conway might see some very good things happening with that outfit. Let's talk about Takuma Sato and Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing making its return to full-time competition. Paul, what are your thoughts on that one?
I like Ray Hall coming back. They've shown in their one-off opportunities the last several years that they can put together a great package. Bertrand Baguette nearly won the 500 last year. Graham Rahal ran very well with them the year before that. So I think they've proved that they still have the capability to run very strong. I still don't have the faith that Takuma Sato can bring a car home consistently to really take advantage of the good ride that Rahal Letterman is giving him. I mean, he's been fast in testing, very fast according to, you know, the testing reports.
Won two poles last year, Paul.
He did win two poles, and what did he do with them?
What do you need to do with them? It was a spec competition year. The fact that he got two poles over any Penske or Ganassi car was pretty impressive.
I would agree, yeah, but you don't win.
And one of them was at Iowa.
One of them is at Iowa. I didn't say he isn't fast. I don't think he has the consistency and the patience to finish the races. And I think the Ray Hall Letterman ride is a ride that is capable of competing for wins. But you got to finish the races to compete for wins. And unless Sato has really changed his outlook, I don't see him being able to take advantage of the quality of that ride.
I don't know.
I'm gonna have to
stats in front of me, but I have to. My feeling, my overall gut feeling from watching him last year was that he was vastly improved over the year before. And well, so I'm comfortable in saying that I think that he could be vastly improved again here. He had the influence of TK last year as well, which I think stabilized him quite a bit. Maybe the question is how good of a driver can he be on his own?
Yeah, exactly. A lead driver. And then from Indy onwards is with Luca being in the second car. I'll tell you this much. Bobby has had an eye on, and we've spoken a lot over this offseason, he's had an eye on Takuma going back to the year he was in Formula 3 over in the UK. And that year he won something, most of the events, if not, I think maybe 4 or 5 that he didn't. But he has the potential to where he's in year 3. This is step up and deliver type year where he had the fraught rookie year. I think he was a borderline top 10 driver last year in terms of, you know, the outright pace being there. He had one of the highest qualifying average. He led laps. He's got, I'd say, about 80 to 85% of what he needs. He just, like Paul touched on, he needs that consistency, and that's really going to be his talking point or his main deal this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the band getting back together, as it's been called, with Dustin Wilson and Bill Pappas returning to Dale Coyne Racing. I keep forgetting that this team has a Honda. Is that terrible? I keep assuming that they've got a Lotus and they're going to be running around at the back, but they don't. They've got a Honda. I don't know how Dale got that deal together, but good on him. This has to be promising. You have to think that there are good things happening with that team. Maybe not on the ovals so much, but, I mean, Wilson squeaked out a win at Watkins Glen in 2010 with this team at a time when he had absolutely no business doing it. So now that everybody's on even ground, you got to think that there's a lot of promise here.
I do and I don't. Justin is still one of the best all-around road and street course racers in the series, and I still think everyone would agree it's unfortunate he's never really had a full top flight ride or the timing just hasn't worked or whatever. But this, the win that he had in 2009, I think it might have been, I think the field was less stout than it is now. And to where Coyne on his day, everything came perfect that day, where now it's like, okay, you're not exactly top on the pecking order at Honda, even though you have a Honda. You still have good engineering, but it's going to be a lot more difficult for him to get a win this year, which isn't a slight on him or the team. I just think the competition top to bottom is that much deeper. So I think he's determined, though. He certainly wants to prove after his back injury last year that he's fully recovered, and I think he's already shown that with his run at the Rolex. He won that, and so we'll see if it translates.
Yes, Tony is quite correct. It was in 2009 that the team won at Watkins Glen. Again, me talking without my stats in front of me and slap myself on the wrist there.
Blame my brain. You're stuck in front of a computer all day. That's what happens.
Paul, anything to add?
I really don't. I think I agree with what both of you hit on there. I think Tony said it very well. I think it'll be a long shot for him to win. I think they'll be competitive, but to pull a win out of the hat with this field as strong as it is would be a real, real chore for Dale Coyne.
Well, brace yourselves, guys, because there are going to be a lot of surprises this year, and I wouldn't be shocked if this was one of them. But we'll see.
Fair enough.
Nobody knows anything at this stage, do we? This is why this is such a great point in racing history. Now is the moment that we can have blind and unabashed optimism. We'll never have this moment again, not for years. Now is the only
time. Until we get aero kits next year, and then that'll start it all over again.
Well, but I don't think that's going to have quite the effect on things that the new chassis and the new engines do. But that's a good point. We will have something to be excited for next year. But right now is the only moment where we know nothing about what's coming. And I'm just sucking it in and embracing this feeling, because it might be a little while before we feel this again. Anyway, let's talk about Ed Carpenter and his team at Ed Carpenter Racing. And it's very easy to look at that and say, "Oh, it's a new team. It's not gonna go anywhere. There's nothing there." But Jarek Walker's running it. That's a big deal. And I mean, Ed has gone into the season saying, "Look, guys, I know that I need to learn my craft on road and street courses, but the guy's the most recent oval winner in the series." So, you know, unfortunately for him this year, the bulk of the schedule is road and street courses. And that is his Achilles heel. But can they get it done on one of the ovals? Paul?
Yes, I think they can. They've run very strong. Well, not Ed Carpenter Racing, but Ed Carpenter and
Sarah Fisher.
Thank you. I knew there was a name there I was searching for.
Yeah, that's what you keep me around for.
Exactly. You know, they ran so strong at all the ovals really last year, but certainly Indianapolis and obviously Kentucky. They both ran that package ran very well. Will all of that come with Ed to his new team? Probably not, but I think he's got a pretty stout package. And like you said, Derek Walker knows how to run a very high-quality operation. I think after Indianapolis or at Indianapolis, I think this is one of those teams that you could see expand another car. And I think bringing another driver on board there could only serve to help Ed and hopefully hone his road racing craft a little bit more. But when it comes to Indianapolis and certainly Texas and California, I think you have to look at that as one of those dark horse teams that should have a pretty good chance to win all of those races.
Tony?
Paul's got it pretty well nailed down. The only thing I'll add to it is not only does he have Derek Walker, but he has Michael Cannon. And we've seen the miracles that Michael has worked over the years. I mean, he's turned so many drivers into race winners. He's made a habit of, if he is with a team that isn't a top flight team, having them punch above their weight. Don't underestimate his impact on that team, especially on – I think he could – I don't think he'll score a top 10 on a road course unless there's way too much attrition. But certainly if he's in that 13th to 16th range, you know, I think it's baby steps to where if he can progressively get better as the season evolves, then that can only serve to – I think this team's more of a breakout 2013 than 12. You know, they'll just get their bearings this year, but they'll certainly be better by the end of the season than at the start.
More importantly, he's modeling a method for which the short track racers can find their way into IndyCar and learn the ropes, which is something that a lot of American Midwest-based fans have been crying for a long time. So let's hope that he finds a way to be successful with that and develops a system that might work to bring other talented oval racers into IndyCar in the future.
I think it would be great if he has another ride there available that almost becomes a landing point for some of those stars to move up. You know, if the program that IndyCar through the Firestone Indy Lights has with the USAC National Champion, if they can get that driver into the lights, you know, get them a good solid year like Brian Clausen, you know, he ran well in his races last year. He's hoping to do Indianapolis this year. If they can get that program really well developed, I could see where a team like Ed Carpenter Racing could be a nice landing point for the USAC stars to really get their foot in the door in the Izod IndyCar Series and show what they can do with good equipment behind them or under them and, you know, really make an impression in front of a lot of people.
So that we hopefully don't lose any more great stars like Kyle Larson, who has unfortunately slipped away from open wheel fingers and has found his way into the stock car ranks. I'm sure Robin Miller is crying into his well, he doesn't drink, but into his milk as we speak.
Sweatpants.
Well said. Okay, so let's move on to Oriel Servia. This is one combination that if you had to pick one to not be very confident about, this would be it. Dryan Reinbold Racing in the Lotus engine, which is so disappointing because didn't he finish third in the championship last year? Again, running stats off the top of my head, fourth.
Yeah.
And it was just such a great run all year with Newman Haas, and you had to hope that he was going to get some momentum off of that. But once again, snake bitten as his career has been, poor guy ends up having to start from square one. And it's just not easy to believe in this combination and that he's going to see the success that he did last year.
No, and every time I've heard him speak, he has failed to really give me warm fuzzies that he's really comfortable and excited with where the program is currently. The rest of the, even when you know the other drivers are kind of not giving it to you straight, they at least put a positive spin on it, even when you know it's not really the truth. He's one that he just hasn't gone out of his way to hide that he doesn't necessarily feel comfortable with where the Lotus and their combination is so far. So I think if he's not even showing fully that he's happy with it, I think that, unfortunately, I think they're going to be struggling here, at least for the first bit of the year, until they really figure out what's going on or see where they are, really, with respect to the other teams. But I agree, it's hard to really, really feel good about this team right now.
Tony?
You just don't... How does a guy like Serbia consistently, year after year, it's always changing teams. Am I going to be in the series? Am I going to have a ride? If I do get a ride, is it going to be better? And he was not going to be in a better situation. I mean, the fact you'd almost say the fact he's even on the grid is almost mm-hmm. better than just the fact that it's going to be at the back. I think the things they've got going for it, certainly one of the better looking liveries in the car. I know that with the whole Lotus factory deal, this I think is the only one that's going to actually be in the full Lotus colors, the black and gold. So I think that stood out well through testing, and U.S. Chiron should do a decent job of engineering. But like Paul said, I don't feel overly confident about this until really we see how the package is and how far really they need to climb.
Let's not forget, though, that each one of these engine battles within itself is going to be interesting to follow. And if we look at the Lotus drivers independently from the rest of the field, I think we'll consistently see Serbia being the fastest of those drivers. And so that in itself, although disappointing in the broader picture, will be an interesting thing to follow. And I think that might be where he finds a little something to hang his hat on this season.
You know what's ironic, though, is that we talk about how he's bounced from team to team to team to team. You know, we talk about his lack of confidence this year. The irony of it is that he's probably got his ride buttoned up earlier this year than he's ever had a ride.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, usually he's going into the 1st of March still trying to scrap together that deal. This time he came together, was it right around Christmas-ish, somewhere in that ball, maybe even before Christmas?
Yeah, I think so.
So, yeah, he's had a little bit of security this winter, and it's just a shame that he hasn't been able to transform that into a good-feeling ride for him going into this year.
Mm-hmm. So next on my list of drivers to talk about is James Hinchcliffe, and I got to tell you guys, that kid is going to win a race this year. I got him for Long Beach.
Hey, Tony, it'd be probably a good time for you to go get a cup of coffee here. I think Steph's going to want to take this one.
No. I'm not going to get on my soapbox.
I was going to cede the floor regardless, but.
No, I'm not going to get on the soapbox. I'm not going to get all patriotic on y'all. I'm just going to say I think he's going to win a race. And
did
I'm
you
just
say
gonna,
patriotic
I'm just gonna laugh on, when.
Did you just
sorry.
Say patriotic on all y'all?
Yeah, I did. Really? I'm trying to relate to you on a level you could understand.
Put this way, I'll laugh when it's Hinch that delivers GoDaddy its first, you know, major motorsports issue.
That will be, you won't it.
I don't know. I mean, Long Beach is a great pick for him because he's run so well there in Indy Lights and Atlantics in his IndyCar race there last year. Andretti has been, of course, the class of that track the last 2-3 years there as well. So, I mean, I personally almost love to see him win in your home country, in Toronto or in Edmonton.
That might also happen, but and that's going to be a huge day. Oh, my gosh.
So,
That someday that will happen. I don't know if I got it, if I'm quite ready to believe that that'll happen this year, because I love Hinch, don't get me wrong, but he does have a tendency to get nervous when he comes home. And I think that's going to bite him for the first couple of years until he gets a little bit more used to it. But I think I could totally see him winning Long Beach easily. I think that track really suits him for some reason. And I think there's a very, very good chance that he'll get it done. And just in general, I think that this guy is, the series is really starting to hang their hats on him a little bit. And I think that it couldn't be better, because he's got the personality, he's got the talent. And there were a few years in there when we were really worried that he wasn't going to really get his career off the ground. And now that he has, I think good things are in store, and it's exciting days. Nothing else? Nobody got anything to add?
The only thing I would add is, remember, he ran very strong last year at Mid-Ohio as well. That could be another track that he really shows some strength on, I think.
Possibly. Okay, let's talk about Joseph Newgarden. You guys can take the floor on this one. The American future hopeful with Sarah Fisher-Hartman Racing. The team, the little team that could but almost didn't.
Yeah, boy, it's funny for him because he is so mature and so just so wise beyond his years. I think he said the other day too, okay, so we were so late in getting our Honda engines, but it doesn't matter, you know, we're going to keep plugging, we're going to keep going with it. My only concern with him is that he's really the only true rookie in the field, and as such, it's not because he's not talented enough. I just think it's going to be difficult to see much in the way of results until the second half of the season. I still don't know if they have a primary sponsor yet. I know that's another thing that was kind of much discussed with all the Walgreens talks, but, you know, I think he might surprise at some point, but it won't be till later in the season.
Paul?
I would agree. I think the bar is really set pretty low. And I don't mean that to be a slam at all on Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing. I just think that, bringing the rookie on board with all the new stuff, all the new engines, all the new cars, I think they've really got a tough road to hoe here. And, like Tony said, I think probably not to judge them until the second half of the season is fair. And even when you do judge them, certainly on the road courses, I think, you know, top 15s are probably victories for that team, to be honest with you. Ovals, you know, if they return the same backbone of that team, and to be honest, I'm not, as far as I know, most of their core of that team, sans the driver, is the same. Newgarden obviously showed last year he knows how to drive on ovals. So maybe a top 10 late in the year at California may not be impossible. I just don't get that we are going to be expecting real high marks from this team this year. I think 13, if they can stick together and really build on whatever they learn in 12, then I think we can start to see more solid improvements from them.
I think asking for a top 10 at the end of the season is probably asking too much, but I don't think that there's any need to ask that much. I think that it's just great that he's there. There really isn't anybody to compare his performance with this season. As Tony said, he's the only. There's nothing to judge by, really. His background is different even from Luca. So I think that just the fact that he's there and he's being developed and he's a promising young American for people to start following and taking an interest in is really all that needs to be brought out of that team right now, and leave anything else for future years if the team is able to get a good program established and start helping him to develop. He showed some really great promise in lights last year. He's a talented driver, but expecting very much in the way of results this year at all, it's asking an awful lot. And I think that as long as everybody knows that, then the expectations for that team are set exactly right. And go to it, and we'll see you in a couple of years.
You know, you can try to curtail expectations, but IndyCar fans and teams still don't really like to keep combinations around that really just don't show well at all.
Yeah, but it's not fair to judge this one as not showing until it's been given at least a couple of years. And I would think and hope that everybody involved in this one knows that. Except maybe the driver, because drivers are highly impatient. But
right.
But we'll see how that part of it goes as time moves on. And maybe it's a combination that just won't gel. And one side or the other will feel that the best thing for everyone is for them to move on as well. I mean, you never know with these things until you really see it get going, right? Something to keep an eye on, anyway. Let's talk about Simon Pagenaud with the newly renamed Sam Schmidt Davy Hamilton Racing and the Honda engine. Of course, Simon being a Honda factory guy. Tony, we're going to talk to you about this one. You probably know more about Simon's driving history over the last couple of years than we do. What do you expect?
Simon and I were actually talking about that at Sebring. He's driven six different iterations of the HPD prototype since 2008. He's driven two P2 specs, then the P1 spec, then back to P2, P1 for one-off, and then I believe P1 this year. There's a lot of carryover to that in terms of the downforce levels, driving style, and what have you. But he's a natural, and he's waited and worked so long to get back into a full-time IndyCar ride since his only season of Champ Car in 2007 that he's probably going to be even more motivated than most, because, you know, this is a driver that, you know, we haven't really got to see what he's done in IndyCar yet, just because I don't think Champ Car was at it. I mean, it certainly wasn't at its peak when he was there, but he made his good impression. He's going to be quick. The question is more, I think, the team around him. I think they still have Rob Edwards. I haven't really gone too much into detail in terms of who staff-wise is there, but it would not surprise me in the least to see him in podium contention middle-ish part of the season. I don't think it would be at the outset, but I think this is one to have more higher expectations for.
Paul?
I agree that their expectations will be higher there. For some reason, last year, though, I kept wanting to believe in this team, and I just felt like I kept getting let down. I don't know if it was the team, if it was the driver, if it was the combination.
Why did Indy 500 pole was not good enough for you?
Well, you know.
The management. There was some of the things that went about last year, even before the end of the season, just seemed to not really click.
But that had a lot to do with Tag as well. I think the driver and the team combination is possibly what was not working there.
And it could have been. Like I say, I don't know where it was, whether it was the team, the driver, or the combination.
And Tag had a lot of history gone wrong with that whole organization too, right? That was his team.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to get to. I personally, just as a fan, still have a lot of heartburn about how that whole thing kind of went down. You know, it was Tag's team, then they merged, then they took over, and then Tag is out completely.
Well, and there was that whole thing, too, with Dan Weldon being put in the car for Kentucky to get seat time before Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there was certainly some, you know, it wasn't all harmonious there last year, and that could have led to some of the at least on-track lack of results. Yeah, they won the pole at Indianapolis, but he ran strong for the first, you know, 100 miles. But really, after that, he was not that much in contention, ended up crashing out of that race. And, you know, he really just didn't do a whole lot the rest of the year. See, I guess he ran strong at Texas in one of the races.
He had the pole at Texas as well.
He had the pole at Texas, yeah. And I think he maybe ran second to Dario on the first race. But, you know, really, by and large, they qualified well, they showed well, but they never really produced the results. So maybe bringing in Pagenaud, he can hopefully bring some new, fresh life into that team and really finish the deal where, for one reason or the other, they couldn't finish it before. So I'd really like to see, certainly Sam Schmidt is a great story. And I think there's a lot of interest in his team. If that team can be successful,
I think that's one that a lot of people would pull for. So, you know, hopefully he can bring it.
Mm-hmm. Having invoked Dan Weldon's name, I do feel obligated to mention that, of course, there will be many aspects of this coming weekend at St. Petersburg dedicated to his memory, and we will, of course, have heavy hearts at various points of the weekend taking part in those and remembering his career and the events of Las Vegas last year. And funny that that should take us into our last driver on the new driver and team combo list, being Alex Tagliani with Brian Herta Autosport and the Lotus engine. Kind of my feeling talking about Tag and Brian Herta is just, nah, I don't have a lot of feelings about it. I don't know that there's going to be anything spectacular. I don't know that it's going to be terrible. I mean, the fact that they have a Lotus engine certainly doesn't work in their favor. They might give Serbia a run for top Lotus once in a while, and I would expect them to frequently get the top money for the non-team, the non-leader circle teams in the sort of side bet contention that's going on with that. But I don't know that anything spectacular is really going to come out of that combination this year. And despite the occasionally strong showings that the Brian Herta Autosport had last year, because, you know, it's an understatement to say occasionally strong showing when a team won the Indianapolis 500. Tony?
The thing that I look at with this team is it's interesting because Brian Herta has had the most time testing really with this car from doing the original testing with the IndyCar series.
Good point.
Now, granted, that wasn't with the same engine, but they have had more of an opportunity to really see the car from start to finish before St. Pete. So I think that might almost give Tag a little smaller edge in terms of the Lotus competitors. That said, I mean, I think you could take what you said about Servia, swap out the team driver and engineer and be like, okay, I don't really expect too much. And once again, you feel like it's not a slight on these guys, but it is just both the nature of the field, the nature of the Lotus, and the nature of, I just, Tagliani's always been kind of one of those guys, almost like don't take offense to this, but like a Giancarlo Fisichella or something, where he's been kind of just around for a while, but he's really never done anything terribly special.
He won a race. Sorry.
Well, so did Giancarlo at some point. odd segue. Please don't rib on that. That's just my opinions.
No, we're all entitled to our opinions. I didn't disagree with you. Paul, anything to add?
Well, I won't go quite where Tony just went. But the feeling I have is, like, I don't know if you ever saw the Seinfeld where George said he couldn't go out with Elaine because they were friends-in-law. You know, if Jerry wasn't there, they couldn't go out together. This kind of feels like Brian Herta and Alex Tagliani were kind of friends-in-law, and they just decided, well, I don't have a driver and I don't have a car, so let's just go ahead and meet up. You know, obviously Dan Weldon was kind of what drove that team last year, and with his passing, you know, not to say that he was coming back with Herta, because obviously he was going to Andretti. But when Dan Weldon got plucked away from Herta to go run with Sam Schmidt at Kentucky and at Las Vegas, it kind of left Tagliani just out in the middle, out in the cold, and it kind of left Brian Herta out in the cold. So I guess their fit kind of seemed natural, but uncomfortable. Maybe because of how Tagliani got kicked to the curb last year at Kentucky. So it just hasn't seemed like a comfortable fit this off season and into the spring. And maybe that's why, you know, I agree with Tony. I just haven't had warm fuzzies about this combination either, because it just doesn't seem like it's one of those, you know, not a flag waving type, you know, we've really been in your face with our new team. So maybe they're quietly confident, or maybe the lack of news and information from that team is a sign that maybe they aren't as confident as they probably need to be, and maybe there are some team gel issues there. I don't know. We'll find out, I guess.
But, we sure will. So let's move on to one last topic that we want to get into in a bit of detail, but we are pushing our time limit quite strongly here, so we can't spend a whole lot of time. But we've got one more general topic to cover, and then we're going to rapid fire through some questions and some picks at the end here. So the one more topic that we want to discuss is race control. Obviously, big changes taking place there. Brian Barnhart being moved out of the position of director of competition during this offseason and replaced with Bo Barfield. Tony, you have quite a bit of experience with Bo from his ALMS days. In fact, I believe you sat in on race control during a race that he was running. So maybe you can be the best person to address this question that we got from listener Mike White, who wanted to know, what is Barfield going to bring to IndyCar, and why was he selected?
Bo is I would say, a needed breath of fresh air. He's consistent, he is pointed, he's direct, and he doesn't really seem to vacillate at all, which I think is just the kind of steadying of the ship that it needs. The big implementation, because he didn't do a full, complete rulebook overhaul this offseason. It was kind of more tweaking the points, but making a clear delineation between blocking and defending, which was, of course, has been the big bugaboo the last couple of years. Instant messaging now between the teams and race control. And really just he has trust in his people. He has assigns the team of stewards that are involved will each have their own specific roles. And what they do is Bo just entrusts them to make their decision. You know, they can bring it to him, but ultimately he's the race director. He has the final say. So it's not a two and a three type opinions goes. It's one opinion rules all. And so, as far as to why he was selected, he wanted it. He has, you know, pushed for this job for a little while at least. And
not to discount Bo at all, but my understanding is also that not a whole lot of other people did want the job, and who could blame them after the way things went last year.
It's a thankless job because it's a thankless job because it's a hornet's nest, really, where you've got a very passionate fan base that will be on you regardless of whatever decisions you make. But from everything he said this offseason, he's done a number of Q&As, a number of media sessions and whatever. I think there's such a level of respect from the drivers to him that the ALMS has had, that the IndyCar drivers that have dovetailed in there have said mostly positive things. I mean, the bottom line is we're talking about it now, but we don't want to be talking about it at any other point the rest
exactly.
of the season. So I think the less we mention Bo Barfield's name from this point forward, the better it's going to be for everyone because we'll just be able to focus on the on-track stuff.
Absolutely.
So that's all I'm going to say about that because I don't need to dovetail and talk too much about race control.
No, that's exactly the right attitude, and that is an attitude that Bo shares. Absolutely. He feels that he should be blending into the background from this point forward, and who would disagree with him? We don't want to hear about it. We don't want the story of the weekend every weekend to be race control. Those days we hope are done. So for those of you out there who still haven't gotten to know Bo Barfield, there is some great information out there that you can use to learn a little bit more. I know Tony has an extensive piece on racer.com. I think Tony is where it lives right now. Is that
correct?
Is that
yep.
Right?
From my time spent with him at Mazda Raceway last year, I was in race control with him for the first 3 of 6 hours for that event. So
fantastic.
Look me up on Twitter. I can get you in touch with that at Tony Zoom. So shameless plug. Apologies.
Oh no, that's what we let people on here for. And we have a piece. Here's our shameless plug as well that we did with Bo very shortly after his announcement as the new director of competition that you can find on More Front Wing. Just type his name, Bo Barfield, into the little search window at the top, and it'll pop right up as the first piece. And it's titled Meet Bo Barfield, and that was a rather extensive interview that we did with him, just getting a feel for his philosophies and his plans for race control. And none of those have really changed from what I've seen from his initial announcement. So do take a look at that as well if you'd like to know a little bit more about how Bo plans to run things in race control this season. So let's just quickly go through a couple of questions. This one is mine. that I want to know from both of you, and I'll give you my quick answer. My question is, how long until the Penske and Ganassi juggernauts are back on top of things? I give it China. I think by China we'll start seeing those, I guess seven cars. I'll lump Graham and Charlie in there too, but I think we'll start seeing those teams consistently winning more races than everybody else by late this season. I'm not even going to give until next year. What do you guys think? Paul?
I would say that might be the case, but I still think KV is going to have a strong season this year. I don't think we're going to see the very stratified series by the end of this year that we saw, you know, around 2008, 2009, when it was strictly all Ganassi and Penske. I think that we're still going to see a pretty even field through most of this year. And then, as Tony touched on earlier, with the Aero Kit intro for next year, I think that it's not a total reshuffling of the deck, but it certainly cuts the deck. And so, you know, I don't think we're going to really see that segregation until maybe well into 2013. I really don't.
I hope you're right, and it keeps things interesting. Tony, what's your take?
I hope Paul's right. The only thing I will say in the most recent new car era that happened was Champ Cars DPO won, in which point you had still the dominant team was Newman Hasse won the championship and won most of the races. So I think by the time Penske and Ganassi gets fully on top, it'll be the last, I would say, three or four races of this season. In the Sonoma, Baltimore, California range, to where they'll have it pretty much mastered by that point. But it could take till the start of next year. But I do think it'll be the tail end of this year first.
The only thing I would point to, though, Tony, is when you go back and look at engine competition eras, whether you look in CART or you look in, you know, IRL from 2002 to 2005.
Five.
You know, if you had the different manufacturers, rarely were two of them equal at the top. So with Penske and Ganassi being on opposite sides of the Honda and Chevrolet divide, there's a good chance one of them may be higher than the other. So, you know, let's just say Honda is perhaps superior. You've got Ganassi being as the number one team, and Penske being the number one Chevrolet team may be on par with the number two Honda team. So you could have another team brought in there just because of the engine manufacturer, the engine competition.
Fair point. All right, let's get into one more question from a listener, and then we're going to do our picks. This question is from Twitter user Grounded Effects, and he wants to know, that we've got, he asks, we've got 26 entries starting this season, we think. I'll add in square brackets because we've still got the question of whether Bourdais is going to make the grid. But of those entries, how many are going to be running every race of the season? My feeling is that this field is pretty stable. I'll be surprised if more than one or two cars drop out along the way. I think that we're looking at a more stable field than we've seen in maybe a long time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And if anything, you're going to have more cars as the season goes on. You'll have at least one more from Indy onwards. If other teams do feel the need for a second car at various events, if Schmidt or Carpenter comes up with a second one, I think you're going to be more in the 28 to 29 range, potentially. I think Dragon, as I touched on, is really the only question mark post however many events to start the season.
Paul, anything to add?
I completely agree with Tony. I think, if anything, it's going to go up. Could be the second Carpenter. Could be hopefully Michael Schenck may still have something going post-Indy.
Bachelard, potentially.
Exact, Bachelard, right. So there's talk of a lot of second cars, and we already know the Ray Hall Letterman will be adding their second car at Indianapolis. So, yeah, I think instead of 26, I think we're probably going to be looking at 28, 29, like Tony said, after Indianapolis, on a pretty consistent basis.
Exciting times. Okay, let's make our picks. We've got a few different topics here. Rookie of the Year, is anybody realistically not going to pick Pagenaud? No.
No.
No. Moving on. Who's going to win the Indianapolis 500, Paul?
Oh, you had to start with me on this one?
Yep.
Wow. There are just so many question marks now.
Quickly, we're running out of time. Come on.
Off
the top of your head. Don't make me whip out the Jeopardy music. We'll come
Scott
back
Dixon.
To you. Okay. Scott Dixon. Tony?
Elio. He wins number
I got
four
Elio, too. Yeah, I got Elio, too. Yeah, I know. I said that last year, though, and he didn't win it. So, but, yeah, the guy gets it done at Indy, no question. We've been asked to give our picks for the A.J. Foyt Trophy. My opinion is that it's almost a joke that they're awarding the A.J. Foyt Trophy this year. Hmm. But if we have to pick somebody, you know what? I'm going to get crazy, and I'm going to say Ed Carpenter. Tony?
I'm going to pick my first namesake, Tony Kanaan.
Mm. Paul?
Taking Ryan Briscoe.
Oh, interesting. Okay, who's going to win the Mario Andretti Trophy, Tony?
Well...
Paul.
Power.
Willpower.
I'm going to take Dixie.
Wow.
Yeah, I think he's I think he's really happy and showed really well in testing, and I think that's going to continue through. So he's also my pick for series champion, which really surprises me. I was totally expecting to pick Will, but no, I think Dixie's due.
I would say Dixie, except for if he doesn't get through St. Pete cleanly, which he hasn't the last 4 years. He's been 16th or worse, so he always is climbing out of a hole. I will take Will.
Okay. Paul?
I'm going to take Scott. Wait, this was series champion, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll take Dixon.
All right. Okay, so who's going to win this weekend at St. Pete? Paul, you go first.
I don't know. I think it'll be somewhat of a surprise because I think people are going to screw up the first turn again. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Ryan Hunter Ray.
That was going to be mine, but I will go with a guy who's won here before and is due, Ryan Briscoe.
I kind of hope it's not Rubens, but I think it might be.
Out of the box?
Yeah. I know. Crazy. That's almost as crazy as picking Ed Carpenter for the A.J. Foyt Trophy. What the heck? I live on the edge.
Yeah, way out there on the edge.
Yeah, well, I never said that making picks was my strong point. Okay, so that wraps us up for this week. Tony, thank you so much for joining us for our insanity. We really appreciate it. Had a great time finally having you on. Hope to have you again soon.
Yeah, always should be free, so look forward to it, and thanks again for this first edition.
Fantastic. And we will be back next week to wrap up whatever, let's use the word insanity again, takes place this weekend at St. Petersburg, and to give you a preview of the following weekend's event at Barber Motorsports Park. I get to use the new tagline.
There you go.
How fun is this? Are you ready?
Da-da-da.
When you need IndyCar news and views, get a grip with More Front Wing.